Good morning, Sharif.
Welcome to This Week in Palestine.
Thank you very much.
You went twice with Jampi to Israel and Palestine in 2004 and 2005. Could you describe the work Jampi did? What kind of medical services it provided?
Sure. The medical project is a part of the Jewish peace movement in the United States. And what we sought to do was to partner with groups in Israel and in the occupied territories, the Physicians for Human Rights Israel and the Palestinian Medical Relief Society, and to take delegations to this area of the world, work with healthcare providers as well as other people, and explore the facts on the ground through the lens of healthcare and human rights. So in Israel, we worked in an immigrant clinic in Tel Aviv for undocumented migrant workers that have been brought in to do the work that Palestinians used to do. In the West Bank, we worked with medical relief in their mobile clinics and their standing clinics. We also did lectures with the only medical school in Palestine, Al-Quds University. And in Gaza, we went to the Gaza Community Mental Health Program. We also saw patients. We went to clinics. So we traveled all around using healthcare as a way to understand the situation better.
What medical conditions did you find were most prevalent?
Well, I think that the problems with healthcare can be divided into a number of areas. First of all, there's the medical infrastructure. And because of the lack of development in this part of the world due to Israeli policy and the corruption of the Palestinian Authority, there's been a complete breakdown in the infrastructure. So, for instance, it used to be that there were primary clinics in villages and then people could be referred up the ladder to higher level care. But because of the system of checkpoints and permits, this whole referral system has been completely destroyed. So from a healthcare point of view, as well as from an economic point of view, access to healthcare is a primary problem. So that means that patients can't get to healthcare providers have trouble getting to work, supplies for healthcare institutions are often lacking, so that the access issue and the control of the civilian population by the checkpoints and by the separation wall have had enormous impact on healthcare. So that was the first thing. Then all of these things kind of follow from it. If there is a complete restriction of movement, then there's growing poverty. So there are all the diseases associated with poverty, malnutrition, anemia, hypertension, those kind of illnesses. There are also issues for pregnant women. There have been reported cases of women actually delivering at checkpoints, dying at checkpoints, babies dying at checkpoints, and it has become enough of a problem that the United Nations has stepped in and documented this particular crisis, and there are now, I believe, 4 maternity homes that have been built in villages so that women don't have to cross the village to the next village to be able to deliver. So we saw a lot of access issues. Poverty also leads to breakdowns in vaccination programs, and the lack of care is also related to the lack of access to water because Palestinians get about 1/4 of the water allotment compared to Israelis. So you see how economics and health care and politics all kind of mesh together, and because of this, the population is living under chronic stress. So you see stress-related illnesses, particularly in Gaza, there's a tremendous amount of post-traumatic stress disorder. And because of the chronic state of danger, you see also a tremendous amount of injuries, disabilities, depression. I mean, this is a very, very traumatized population that we saw.
Was the denial of medical care concentrated in certain areas of checkpoints, or was it widespread?
The checkpoints are widespread, so their impact is widespread. One of the big issues is that the high-level, tertiary care-level hospitals are located primarily in East Jerusalem. And with the growth of the separation wall, it has become increasingly difficult both for hospital personnel and medical students to get to the tertiary care hospitals, as well as for patients to access them. So that was a particular issue, although there is a major tertiary care hospital in Hebron. But, you know, the checkpoints exist everywhere, from village to village to village, so their impact is everywhere.
There have been reports of ambulances being stopped at checkpoints and denied passage and so forth. Is this a run-of-the-mill thing?
Right. In fact, the data is that ambulances are one of the most frequently stopped vehicles of all the vehicles in the occupied territories. And so this is a totally common occurrence. I actually, with a group of other providers, traveled from Ramallah to Tulkarm because I had given a day of women's healthcare lectures in Ramallah, and I was going to Tulkarm, and we went by ambulance, which is how medical personnel often travel. And this was about a 60-mile ride, and we went through 7 checkpoints, and we stopped at each one, had our papers checked, and we were in an ambulance, and you know there were 4 doctors and 2 midwives in the ambulance. So this is a totally common occurrence.
Does it seem to you that the denial of medical care as part of a policy and not the isolated decision of certain soldiers?
I think the restriction of access is the policy, and the denial of care is the outcome of that policy. And one of the issues that we see is that soldiers, when faced with a woman in labor or someone in extremis, often don't respond to that humanitarian crisis, so that you know every Palestinian is looked at as a terrorist instead of as a human being who has needs, who's trying to get to the doctor or the school or whatever. So it's one of the fallouts of this total policy of restriction and control.
Do you have any recommendations on what needs to be done to improve medical care in Palestine?
There's so much that needs to be done. It's kind of hard to imagine where to begin. I think the first issue is the level of checkpoints and restrictions in this area of the world that's about a fifth the size of New Jersey. There are some people say about 700 checkpoints, roadblocks, security blocks, et cetera, that make it difficult to go anywhere. So that alone needs to be lifted so that people can get from one place to another. The other thing is that from the time of the 67 occupation till Oslo, Israel as the occupying power was responsible by international law for the health care of this area. And basically they just let it rot. And particularly in Gaza, where everything is worse than it is in the West Bank, the level of infrastructure totally deteriorated. And the Palestinian Authority has not either been an effective leader in this regard as well. So NGOs have stepped in to provide a huge amount of the care. So there's a massive need for the building of infrastructure. And then there's also a tremendous need for the training of medical staff. For instance, in Gaza, there's no medical school. And so the doctors that are in Gaza have no ability to improve their skills, to take advanced programs, to get better at what they're doing. So the level of care is very low. There's also a major problem of attacks on medical personnel, on ambulances, on clinics, and we did see that or hear people talk about their personal experiences. I mean, a physician being used as a human shield by an Israeli soldier, horrendous things that are in complete violation of international law. And so that makes it's actually difficult to be a healthcare provider. I mean, we had an ambulance driver who'd had a door slammed on his leg by an Israeli soldier, and he's crippled from this. I mean, you hear these stories all the time. So that the safety of the personnel and the ambulances and the clinics has to be just a given. And then with the issue of the separation wall, which many Israelis are very in favor of, one of the downsides of this wall, besides separating villages from villages and creating havoc in the economy, is that there is something called the seam area, which is an area between the green line, which is the armistice line between Israel and the occupied territories, and the wall. And in the seam area, there are tens of thousands of Palestinians who no longer can access the West Bank for services, but also can't access Israel for services. So this is like a high crisis population that's just lost its connection to social services. So in terms of structure, there's so much that needs to be done in the infrastructure. A lot of the hospitals they need to be modernized. They need to be able to have a regular supply of equipment and medication. Physicians constantly were telling us how difficult it is for them to get medication. So it goes back to the supply and access issue. So those are the things that I would think of, you know, sort of immediately coming to mind.
I believe that JMP has also sponsored some Palestinian students and physicians to come to Boston.
Right. I mean, our goal is to humanize this conflict. So we want people to see a medical student who's trying to get her degree and who has watched the separation wall be built right next to her house, and now it takes 2 hours for her to get to school rather than 5 minutes. We want her to come to the States, have an experience at Harvard Medical School, go back and think and talk about what's going on. And then we're sponsoring Harvard Medical students to go to study at Al-Quds. And so we've just set up that program. We've had one group of Palestinians come here, and then there's going to be a group of Harvard students going there. We've also sponsored tours of both Israeli Jewish and Arab physicians and Palestinian physicians to the United States, again, to talk about the facts on the ground, what happens to civilians living in this kind of situation, and how devastating it is from, you know, how the politics affects the healthcare and the human rights issues.
So how can people help from here?
Well, I think the first thing is that people really need to know more about what's going on, and there's no way you can know by reading the mainstream media. There are lots of good websites. I would recommend MIFTA, M-I-F-T-A-H, and Palestine Monitor, which looks at the different NGOs and talks about what's going on. There's also Israeli organizations such as B'Tselem and Physicians for Human Rights and Gush Shalom. And in the States, there are a lot of organizations I'm familiar with, particularly the Jewish Voice for Peace and Visions of Peace, that are trying to bring home the story on its own human terms. I think once you understand these things, then it's important to support groups working in the area who are promoting human rights and improving health care. And it's also important for us to understand how our own government has an impact on this region. First of all, you know, Israel does get approximately a quarter of U.S. foreign aid money, so that we as U.S. citizens are funding this occupation. So I think it's important for us as citizens to put pressure on our own government. And the most recent thing that's come up is the bill in the legislature, H.R. 4681, the Palestine Anti-Terrorism Act, which would basically remove funding for the humanitarian and social services and the PA in Palestine, and it will be have a devastating effect. And so people need to contact their representatives to say this is not a good approach. They've had a democratic election. You may or may not like the results, but starving the population is not the way to go here. So I think we as Americans have a tremendous responsibility to put pressure on our government, and we should also be working with peace groups who refuse to be enemies and, you know, who cross lines and really try to support the people that are in the area. And, you know, I would recommend people going to our website, which is vopj.org. And also, if people are interested in going on these delegations, they can contact us through the website or through our phone number, which is 617-984-0532. So those are some little ideas that I have.
Well, that's great. Dr. Rothschild, thank you so much for being our guest today. It was a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Boston physician and human rights activist Dr. Alice Rothschild. And that's all we have for today. We wish our listeners a pleasant and restful weekend and look forward to having you with us next Sunday, same time. Until then, this is Sharif Pham signing off for now.
Thank you very much, Sharif. We're very pleased to have you here every week to get updated on the events going on halfway around the globe. I appreciate your efforts. We are going to move now into some local event announcements, after first letting you know that you are listening to Truth and Justice Radio here on WZBC Newton. If you're interested in learning more about what's happening in the world around you besides listening to this show, you can also catch Democracy Now! On this very station, Monday through Friday from noon to 1 p.m., and that's with Amy Goodman. Saturdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. you can catch John Grebe, and I believe next week he even has an extra hour to make Sounds of Dissent. On our sister station, WMFO 91.5 in Medford, No U-Turn Radio can be heard Tuesdays 8 to 10 a.m. with Dean Wallace. Our other sister station, WMBR 88.1 Cambridge, Radio with a View, Sundays 10 to 11:30 a.m., Dave Goodman and Mark Stern. And on Sundays, 11:30 to 1 p.m., What's Left with Linda Pinko and Will Taggart. There's a few websites that you may wish to visit if you're interested in obtaining more information on the goings-on. There's justicewithpeace.org, ACTMA, ACTMA.org, Lucy Parsons, LucyParsons.org. I'll just spell this one out. Lexington Global Warming Coalition, LexGWAC.org. LexingtonJPC.org. UnitedForPeace.org. If you were tuned in for our segment immediately preceding This Week in Palestine, they were covering, upcoming changes and consequences in legislation affecting digital rights. This is something that our own Representative Ed Markey is working on in committee, and it would be good for our representatives and senators to hear from us on our views on this. There are a number of numbers we have here where you can reach the Capitol switchboard. You can dial up and ask for a particular senator or congressperson. You can dial 1-800-426-8073, or you can dial 888-818-6641. Another 888-355-3588. And you can call the station here if you would like to get more access numbers. So, continuing on with the events, Sunday, March 5th at 11 a.m., the Community Church of Boston Sunday Speakers Forum presents Margaret Dieter and Zella Brown, One by One, Transforming the Legacies of Conflict, War, and Genocide Through Dialogue, with music by Mark Sumos. That's at the Community Church of Boston, 565 Boylston Street. That's Copley Square in Boston. Their website is www.comchurch.org.